Judy Blume has touched generations of readers with such memorable novels as Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret, Blubber, Then Again, Maybe I Won't, Tales of a Fourth Grade Nothing, and Wifey. In her new novel for adults, In the Unlikely Event, just out in paperback, she takes us back to 1950s Elizabeth, New Jersey, where real-life tragedy strikes as a series of airplanes fall from the sky, leaving the community reeling. Judy Blume joins us on the roundtable this morning to discuss the new novel, her groundbreaking career, and about the books we all grew up reading. It is a great pleasure to welcome Judy Blume to the roundtable this morning. Judy, thank you very much for being with us. What a great honor.
Thank you so much.
What led you to want to write this particular book, your first for adults in a very long time?
It's a story that's been inside me, I guess, since I was 14. I don't even want to think how many years ago that was. But I've never forgotten the story. And yet what seems shocking to me as a writer is that I had this story inside me and I never thought of telling it. Now that I can't explain at all. But when it came to me that I wanted to do it, it came all at once in a big rush. But it took 5 years to get it down.
And it does certainly seem as though what happened and these experiences that you went through in your childhood would greatly affect you for a very long time.
One would think so. But, you know, I've talked to all of my friends. I'm still friendly with many people from Elizabeth that I grew up with. I don't know anybody who is affected by it. I think the difference is there was no media coverage then. You know, we weren't bombarded with images of what was going on. Yeah, there were newspaper accounts and they were very, very well done because I, you know, went back into the newspaper stories for my research, and I used the newspaper stories with some changes, but I don't think I read the newspaper when I was a kid. I don't think my friends did either. And there was television, but there was no TV news coverage. So it was very different. Unless you were there, unless you saw... Are we going to talk about what this is? Should
yes,
I just say it
you
right
can
now?
Say it. We're talking about...
Okay, well, the background... The story is... The characters are fictional, of course, but the background of these stories... It's set against events that really happened in Elizabeth, New Jersey in 58 days during the winter of 1951-1952, when three commercial airliners crashed into our town, each one very close to a school or, in one case, an orphanage, leaving the town reeling. But it's really strange that, you know, I'm not afraid to fly. None of my friends are afraid to fly. My daughter became a commercial airline pilot. My brother was career Air Force. I don't know if it was just denial. I don't really think so. And I was, an anxious, imaginative kid. And no adult ever talked to us about this. No one at home, not any of my friends' parents, no one at school ever brought this up, in my memory anyway. So we were left to try to figure it out ourselves.
And in that figuring it out, you do feel the repercussions of the adults, because they're reeling from this, of course.
They are. Well, you know, again, it's fiction. I don't know.
Sure.
Were my parents reeling from it? I imagine my father was. My father was a dentist. He was called in to identify victims by their dental records. I knew that, and yet it was never talked about at home. My mother, of course, was always in denial about everything, so there was no way that she was going to talk about it or allow my father to talk about it. And I was very close to my father. Maybe if I had gone to him and said, Daddy, please tell me about this, my guess is he would have. He would have told me something. But, you know, today we would think it's terrorism, wouldn't we? I mean, we'd be on some kind of heavy-duty alert.
Right.
Three planes in 58 days it makes no sense now. It made no sense then, except I have to say we lived very close to Newark Airport, and, you know, flying around commercially was relatively new in the early 50s.
As you mentioned, the characters are fiction. You weave together this portrait of three generations of families and friends and strangers. Let us begin with Mary Ammerman, who and her mother, Rusty, and that relationship as a jumping-off point of these characters you created.
Well, I love Mary and Rusty. What can I say? I mean, I didn't grow up in a household like Mary. Mary has she's only 33, Rusty, mother when Mary is 15. Her mother goes to business, as they called it, in New York because she's a single mom. They share their house with Irene, Mary's wonderful grandma, who I also adore, and Uncle Henry, Mary's young uncle, who is a newspaperman. And as it turns out, he makes his name reporting these tragedies. And, you know, it wasn't what he thought it would be when he started out as a young reporter, but it's what happened. And he did what needed to be done.
So much of it, too, is about the relationship between mother and daughter. And as you say, it's different than the circumstances are different than your relationship. And yet that mother-daughter relationship is so fascinating to read.
Yeah, I love their relationship, yes. I mean, Rusty is always so worried that she's not a good enough mother, mainly because she goes to work. And other mothers are not going to work. You know, although Mary has a friend whose mother is a nurse, it's funny. I mean, I didn't even think about that, you know, until later on. And Christina, another important character, has a mother who has a shop in town. And so she's out working every day, too. But Rusty just worries, I suppose mostly because Mary is fatherless and curious about her father. Rusty is not about to give her any information on who her father is. During the course of the story, I'm not going to do any spoilers here, but during the course of the story, Mary will meet her biological father.
When you write things like that in those scenes, and you know you're coming to that, is there an excitement that comes of that, you know, at the point you have to have that moment and the creation of that moment?
An excitement about it. Well, it's always exciting on the day that something significant happens in your character's lives. I'm a reviser, so the best stuff comes. I mean, I have like 20 notebooks over 5 years that I kept to write this book, because it's very intricate. And as you say, all the characters are eventually connected. But yeah, I mean, those are good scenes. I love that scene. Yeah, I love the scene when Mary meets him.
Was it fascinating for you to write about a teenager in another time period? You've written so much about adolescence and teens, and they have been contemporary. Was it interesting for you to put them into a different time period?
Yeah, remember, you know, my husband would say to me, Judy, you know, you're writing an historical novel. And I would say, what are you, crazy? I'm writing about when I was young. That's not an historical novel. And people will, and I did do a lot of research. But when people say to me, but how did you get the music right? How did you get, you know, everything, all the little details, even some of the words they use? I would just look at them and say, well, you know, this is my life. This is what it was like when I was young. This was my music. Pixie Pink was my lipstick. We put Angora sweaters in the refrigerator. We did all these things. I didn't have to find that out in research. So it seemed very natural for me to tell the story this way, because I do have a good memory, especially for, you know, what was going on when I was a kid. But I didn't remember everything. And the research taught me and reminded me and enlightened me and let me see it as an adult.
One of the things that I think is interesting to consider here is that so many of us think about it of that time period as a much more innocent time. And in reading this book, you don't get that impression.
I have never thought the 50s was a very great time, frankly. Innocent, maybe different, but I wouldn't call it innocent. I mean, yeah, we were free to play outside and go on our bikes wherever we wanted to go and take buses. We even took the train into New York on our own when we were young teenagers. We weren't very far away from New York City, maybe 20 minutes on the train. And sure, that's different, but really not innocent, secretive. Oh, I hated the secrets. Secrets, secrets, secrets about everything. Adults didn't share a thing with kids, but there was plenty going on. I mean, remember, we were fighting in Korea. We'd just come out of the Second World War, really. This is 1951, 1952. Second World War was not that long before this. You know, I remember the end of the Second World War. I remember being on the boardwalk. I was a little kid. I wrote about that in Sally Friedman. But anyway, that's a different story. You know, we had McCarthy and his witch hunt. I knew these things. I didn't necessarily read the paper, but I somehow knew. I don't know how I knew, but I knew what was going on, even though there was no TV news coverage. You know, you didn't sit down at night and watch the news because there wasn't any. There was news, but it wasn't on television. So we didn't have images except in the newspapers. But all the stories, you know, I knew that there were boys at the Janet Memorial Home, which was the only orphanage in town. They all, you know, we all went to school together. I knew that boys had run out in the middle of the night into the burning and exploding plane, and they pulled people out. Miraculously, there were survivors in that crash. And I knew that. I knew a boy, Joe Lieberman, who lived in the neighborhood, who ran out at night with his camera. He was in ninth grade. I was in eighth. He was in ninth grade. He took pictures, and they were published in the Elizabeth Daily Journal, the local newspaper. So Joe saw this. You know, a lot of people saw it. I didn't see it. I didn't see any of the crashes. My brother says that, my brother's 4 years older, and he said that he did, when he came home from college and it was Christmas time, he did see the remains of the first crash, but he wasn't there when it happened.
I was thinking of this as I read your novel when I read it originally in hardcover, and I thought that, you know, one of the coolest things is that I'm 48 years old, I'll be 49 this year, and I grew up reading you. So to still be able to read you, because we often leave our children's book authors behind as we grow, and it's delightful to be able to take you with us.
Oh, thank you so much. That makes me very happy. Thank you.
And I assume you hear that often in the fact that people who read you, that there is a comfort, a great nostalgia, a great beauty in that idea of bonding with a storyteller at a very young age and still being able to have that person tell you stories as you grow up.
Yeah. You know, we opened a bookstore recently in Key West, my husband and I. I mean, every day there are wonderful things that happen in the bookstore. But the other day, a woman and her daughter came in, and I was on the floor working, and she didn't recognize me or know who I was. And she said, "Do you have Judy Blume books here? I want my daughter to see Judy Blume books." And I said, "Oh, I can go one better than that. I can give you Judy Blume herself." And it was like, no. Oh, it was fun. It was it It's very, very satisfying to be in the bookstore. And yeah, we do a lot of pictures. Oh, please, please, can we have a picture?
And you also, at least I did, I mean, you see connections. You see things and themes that you wrote about in the classic books of our childhood that you continue to write. But those beautiful scenes that we know from Are You There, God, It's Me, Margaret, and Blubber, and Super Fudge, and all those books that we grew up with, Tales of a Fourth Grade Nothing. And there's still connections to that because, of course, it's coming from you.
You know, that's interesting because sometimes I look at those books. I'm easy on myself when I look at my books that I wrote a long time ago. It feels, of course, they're so old that somebody else wrote them anyway. And I'm not sure that I could write those books now. I don't think I could write Margaret or Blubber now. I'm a more complicated person, maybe, or I'm more aware of my complications than I was then. You know, I was looking back then, I was young, I had two babies, and I just wanted desperately to tell stories. I needed creative work in my life. And I guess I was always a storyteller inside my head. That's how I played when I was little. I played by making up stories. I practiced the piano by giving myself a notebook full of students that I invented. And that's how I practiced the piano every day. My mother didn't know that. I kept my little notebook, and I had these students, and I had little backstories for them. I guess I couldn't have been more than 12 or 13. I played as they played, and then I would make notes and scold them if they weren't playing properly. But everything was more fun with stories attached to it. And that's how I grew up. And so I needed that after I grew up. I never knew that I would need that. Never dreamed of being a writer, telling stories by writing them down.
I've always wondered, when you wrote Are You There, God, It's Me, Margaret, was there pressure on you, and I mean public pressure, or maybe even personal pressure, to write a book for boys?
No, absolutely nothing. I was nobody. I was nothing. I mean, I wrote this book. The day that I sent it off, you know, to my publisher, then I had published Iggy's House, I guess, or maybe it wasn't even out yet. Iggy's House might not have even been out yet. I sat down at my kitchen table and I thought to myself, okay, I've been a 12-year-old girl for however 6 months or something. I was fast in those days. Now I want to be a 12-year-old boy. And that's when I started writing, then again, maybe I won't.
So it wasn't a feeling of, okay, this is for the girls in my audience and this is for the boys? Because
I didn't have any audience. I didn't know if I ever would have an audience.
Well, I was reading
you. Would be. Yeah, but I didn't know. And anyway, the people then who were going to read me, remember, this was really before the books came out.
Yeah, that's true.
Margaret wasn't out when I started to write Then Again, Maybe I Won't. And I'm not sure that Iggy was even published yet. I don't think it was when I was writing Margaret. And my first readers were my daughter's age. She's mid-50s now. So, you know, my first readers are a little bit older than you.
Yes.
I didn't know anything about writing. I didn't know anything about publishing. I didn't even have an agent. So there was no public pressure for me to do anything.
I know.
In a way, that's good, I have to say, that, you know, when you don't know anything and nobody knows you, that's probably the best time to write.
Sure. I know we have talked in the past about censorship and about what you have gone through and continue to go through with your books. When you sent in the manuscript of Are You There, God, It's Me, Margaret, or even Then Again, Maybe I Won't, did you get back feedback that said, oh, well, you can't talk about menstruation, you can't talk about wet dreams?
Not then. Mm-mm. Not in the 70s, no. Everything started in 1980, really.
So it was shocking when that came about then, I would assume, that there was a backlash, considering there had been a period where nobody was as concerned.
Well, the 70s were a much freer time. It was a very good time. So many of us came of age writing children's books, then the children's books that my kids loved. I mean, you know, we lost Lois Duncan.
Yes.
I don't know if you know that.
I do, yes.
Oh, my God, I was so incredibly sad. When I moved to New Mexico, she was there, and we had a little first Tuesday or first Friday or something meeting in Albuquerque where all the writers got together, and it was, I lived farther away. I lived in Los Alamos in the beginning and then in Santa Fe, but I didn't care. I would drive down to Albuquerque just to spend, you know, an afternoon with these other writers, and Lois was one of them. So this was, you know, really, really hit me hard.
And, you know, there's a case where, obviously, with the death of her daughter, it was difficult for her. She kind of gave up writing in the end of her life.
A terrible thing. She devoted the rest of her life to trying to solve that crime. I mean,
with her 18-year-old daughter, right?
Her daughter was shot and killed in a drive-by shooting. And she wrote about it, of course. I was at a convention once. This was really eerie. A convention, and Lois was on stage talking, and she was talking about this story. And suddenly all the lights in the convention hall flickered and went out.
Mm.
And Lois was like, you see? You know, and we were all like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah, I loved Lois, and I can't imagine anything worse.
You were talking about the writers of that time and all.
We all came of age together, and so many of them have died. It's just shocking. Some of them young. I mean, Paula Danziger, we lost. Norma Klein was only 50.
Mm-hmm. And I read all of them, but they weren't doing what you were doing. I mean, they were talking about, especially Paula was doing things that were very contemporary and spoke to kids, but they weren't talking about sex as in detail that you were, or talking about puberty and maturity. You were somewhat alone in that.
Well, Norma Klein was. We were always band together. I mean, always. And she was my first writing friend. She was the first person I met who was writing the kinds of books I was writing. She wrote a wonderful book called Mom, the Wolfman, and Me. That was her first published book. And Norma was, she was a very prolific writer, so much more prolific than I was. And, you know, she once said, I'm going to analyze all your books and see how you do it. And I said, oh my God, please, if you do that, don't tell me. Don't tell me. Don't tell me. And I was envious in a not an unfriendly way with, how does she do this? How does she write so many books? Her mind was so much clearer than mine, I think. She just sat down and in 30 days she had an adult novel, 10 pages a day. And then she would sit down and write a novel for young people. She was fearless. She almost went looking for trouble. I never went looking for trouble. I just wrote what I had to, but Norma liked to really get them.
With books like It's Okay If You Don't Love Me, I remember that.
Yeah, and, you know, they're being reissued, which is wonderful. Lizzie Skernick is reissuing Lois Duncan books, too. She's reissuing a lot of the books that she grew up on, the 70s books. They're out of print, many of them, and she is bringing them back into print, which is wonderful, I think.
I heard in original interviews when this book was published in hardcover, you were saying that it may be your last adult novel. You didn't know if you had it in you to write another one. Do you still feel that way?
Yes, I do. It's not that I don't feel that I have it in me to write another one. It's that I choose not to because it was a very intense 5-year period that I was working on this book. Now I have a wonderful bookstore to go to every day, and I love it, and it's totally satisfying. And this is the first day I've sat at my desk in a long time, and I'm thinking, oh, I remember, I used to love to do this. And I'm not saying that I'll never write anything, but I don't think I'll write another long novel. I don't think I want to do that.
The new novel is In the Unlikely Event, and so in the meantime, we have this to savor. In the Unlikely Event, it is published by Vintage. Judy Blume, a great pleasure and honor to speak with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. It was fun.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.